When you walk in the wilderness, what else may be walking there with you? Most of us have heard of Sasquatch, Bigfoot, the Yeti, and many of us believe in the existence of such creatures. But how far do we have to go to find something strange, impossible, even devilish, hiding? Welcome to Strange and Unexplained with me, Daisy Egan. I'm a former New Yorker who has tried my best to avoid the state of New Jersey. I suppose I have no real personal beef with the state or its residents. I just grew up with my mother, who was herself a terrible driver, frequently yelling out the car window at other drivers, "Go back to Jersey!" So, like my dislike for okra, my dislike for Jersey is a family tradition. It turns out, though, that the Garden State has a dark legacy beyond bad drivers, or even that of Chris Christie or Snooki. Just a short distance from the New Jersey Turnpike, another creature of legend may be waiting. Wander with me deep into the Pine Barrens, where we will search out the enduring legend of the Jersey Devil. The Jersey Devil. Even the name conjures satanic images. Mind you, that isn't its only name. It has been called a number of things over the years. The Hoodle Doodle Bird, the Wozel Bug, and the Leeds Devil among them. But I've been called a few names too, and I don't answer to most of them. Plus, Hoodle Doodle Bird and Wozel Bug are hardly monikers that speak to the terror that is the Jersey Devil. Whichever name you prefer, the creature it identifies is usually described as a winged beast that haunts the darkened woods of New Jersey known as the Pines, and it is always described as grotesque. But where did this chilling tale of winged monsters amidst the forest originate? And is there any truth behind the legend? According to the most famous version of the legend, in 1735, a poor Quaker called Mother Leeds labored on a stormy night to birth a child. As lightning cracked and the wind howled, it is said that Mother Leeds bemoaned the coming of this, her 13th offspring. I mean, who can blame her? Aside from the number 13 being seen during witch-burny times as a very bad and unlucky number, 13 is just a lot of children. 13 is great for donuts, a baker's dozen, but for kids, I find one to be a lot. I am not cut out for baby factory toiling on a farm, birthing babies on a bed of hay times. It's hard to say what J.D. Vance would make of me. Probably he would see my function as being something between Trixie Hill Witch and a gender nightmare. And on this, and only this, we would agree. Anyway, Mother Leeds didn't want yet another child to feed, clean up after, and clothe, I guess. And I don't want to speculate too much, but I assume she didn't have much say as to whether or not she got pregnant in the first place. So legend has it, she cursed her new baby, and though the child was born without any obvious maladies or physical deformities, the child then transformed. Its body elongated and sprouted wings. Its head morphed into that of a horse. Its little baby feet became cloven hooves, and, of course, it promptly grew a thick tail. The now horrifically deformed child escaped its mother and flew out the chimney into the night, departing to the wild pineland, where it still marauds to this day. I would imagine Mother Leeds was like, oops, but also good riddance. Or that is one version of the tale, anyway. With a legend as old as this one, it's not too surprising that the details are fuzzy. As with any story passed down in the oral tradition, it's like a giant game of telephone. Stories vary depending on who shares them or depending on when the stories are told and to whom. The Jersey Devil is no different. Some versions of the story have Mother Leeds being in league with the devil, like most women back then and today, and cursing the baby. Other accounts suggest the curse was placed on the child by a local gypsy, because, of course. Please don't DM me, that's the word used in the legend. I am aware it is racist. In this boringly racist variation of the story, the pregnant woman was more like a pregnant teenage girl who refused to provide food for the gypsy woman in question, and she retaliated by making the stingy girl give birth to a grotesque creature. In this version, the Jersey Devil is born in 1850 and is the girl's first child. Some say the townspeople were the ones who placed the curse because the child was supposedly the product of a forbidden romance between the mother, who in this version is a young local girl from Leeds Point, and a British soldier. The townsfolk saw the match as treasonous and, by way of punishment, cursed the girl. When she gave birth to the unwelcome offspring of her enemy lover, it became known as the Leeds Devil. There is also a version of the origin story that doesn't corroborate the existence of the Jersey Devil so much as it seems to weirdly take credit for Halloween. It says that in October of 1830, Mr. John Vliet from Vienna, New Jersey, was entertaining his children with a mask of a monstrous face that he had made. And according to AtlanticCountyNewJersey.gov's page on local history, quote, it became a yearly tradition and was adopted by the local townsmen. Its popularity grew and was repeated late in October as parents and children alike put on scary faces and costumes, end quote. Never mind that Halloween is actually an ancient tradition that predates the existence of New Jersey by centuries. The wildest version of the story, though, is the one where Benjamin Franklin started it. According to Mythology.net's page on the Jersey Devil, quote, all of the elements of the Jersey Devil myth can be tied back to a rivalry between the Leeds family and the Quaker population that lived in New Jersey, end quote. According to this legend, all the way back in 1677, a man named Daniel Leeds settled down in what are now the Pine Barrens of New Jersey. Daniel was involved in the Quaker community in the area, and as part of his work with the Quakers, he developed an almanac which became the source of all the trouble. Isn't that always the way? Pesky almanacs, what with their helpful information and such. I guess Daniel's almanac was controversial. While the majority of the content was fine with the Quakers in charge, there were some references to astrology in the book which shocked and angered some of the community. And I get it. If one more person tells me Mercury is in retrograde when I tell them something shitty happened to me, I cannot be responsible for my reaction. As far as I'm concerned with the way things are going, Mercury is permanently in retrograde. I know this will come as a surprise, stranger, but the general population of the northeastern seaboard in the late 1600s was critical of mysticism of any kind. They accused Daniel Leeds of being involved in occultism, and all I can say is Daniel Leeds is lucky he was not a woman, because if he were, he would most likely be clutching a stone at the bottom of the Delaware River instead of being the edgelord he was. Mythology.net tells us that, quote, instead of giving in to the will of the community, however, and taking out the references to astrology, Leeds only became more dedicated to the publishing of German mysticism, end quote. Weird hill to die on, but okay. You exercise that religious freedom, Daniel. Leeds kept publishing what people at the time considered to be anti-Quaker material, and the community grew increasingly disgusted with him. And then, when the colonists opposed British rule, Daniel Leeds just had to be a contrarian, and he took the side of the British. What is it with New Agey dudes always wanting to be on the wrong side of history? One day your yoga instructor is telling you to breathe into your root chakra, and the next he's telling you to drink bleach. The community was obviously outraged, so they did what any self-respecting person from the Puritan times would do. They published a tract saying that Daniel Leeds worked for the devil. Cut to 1733. Daniel Leeds was long retired from almanac making, and his son, Titan Leeds, had been publishing the slightly mystical almanacs in his stead, when Benjamin Franklin decided to publish his own Poor Richard's Almanac, a prediction of the exact day that Titan Leeds would die. Founding Father Shade is the shadiest. A rivalry between the two began and continued even when Titan did die in 1738, not, by the way, on the date Franklin had predicted. Franklin would write about the ghost of Titan Leeds. Now, according to mythology.net, quote, "Because this was the time period that was known to have been at the height of the rivalry between Benjamin Franklin and Titan Leeds, many people theorize that the story could have been invented by Franklin as a way of discrediting the Leeds family name," end quote. Phew! Kendrick Lamar and Drake have nothing on this powdered wig almanac beef of the 1700s. Whatever its origin may have been, the Jersey Devil has spent the last 2+ centuries cementing itself as a bona fide folktale with teeth, as it has been credited with making crops fail, drying up the milk cows and causing droughts, as well as being blamed for treetops being blown clean off, streams boiling, and the requisite death of livestock. In some stories, the Jersey Devil only shows up every 7 years to wreak some havoc. Some look at the sightings of the Jersey Devil as an omen of war and disaster. As we are ever on the brink of war and disaster, though, that seems convenient. The various sightings of the Jersey Devil that have been reported over the years have lent strength to the belief in its existence. In one early sighting, U.S. naval hero Commodore Stephen Decatur visited Hanover Mill Works in Hanover Township to check on some cannonballs he was having made. The estimable Commodore stopped by the firing range when he reported seeing a flying creature. He did what any naval hero in his position would do, he shot a cannon at it. Whether he hit it or not is unclear. I'm assuming not, because a cannonball would have obliterated anything it hit, right? And the Jersey Devil sightings just kept on coming. I guess the Commodore wasn't a great shot? In another popular sighting, one Joseph Bonaparte reported seeing the Jersey Devil. Joseph Bonaparte was Napoleon Bonaparte's brother. Not only that, but he was installed by Napoleon as King of Naples and later King of Spain. When Napoleon fell, Joseph saw fit to get the heck out of Europe and settled in New Jersey. Imagine having been king in 2 separate countries and still only ever being known as Napoleon's brother. And then imagine being a king and ending up in Bordentown. It kind of seems like the very early witness protection situation. So, Joseph saw the Jersey Devil while hunting in the woods near his Bordentown, New Jersey home. Or some say he was actively hunting the creature when he encountered it. I don't know, because there is literally nothing else about this encounter anywhere at all. Cool. If he was hunting it, I guess he wasn't a great shot either. One of my favorite tales of the Jersey Devil links the creature to the ghost of another larger-than-life character, the legendary pirate Captain Kidd and one of his victims. The Delaware Yachtsman League maintains a website, and on that website it says, quote, "The infamous Captain Kidd is reputed to have buried treasure in Barnegat Bay. Legend has it he beheaded one of his men to guard forever his buried treasure. Accounts claim the headless pirate and the Jersey Devil became friends and were seen in the evenings walking along the Atlantic and in nearby marshlands," end quote. Wow, imagine that. They have so much in common. One deformed at birth, the other disfigured at death, each sharing an abiding love for shadowy pinelands and stinky marshes. I can see the buddy movie starring Ryan Reynolds and Adam Driver now. Sadly, as thrilling as this account is, it is, again, the only account I could find of its kind. Sounds like a flight of demonic fancy to me. And there are so many accounts of the Jersey Devil that are like this. Several sources mention the Jersey Devil serenading a mermaid in 1870, which is even more fantastic than the Jersey Devil hanging out with a headless ghost. But these accounts are generally disappointingly lacking in any detail. There's also a story that the Jersey Devil had ham and eggs with a Republican judge, and honestly, this would be the least far-fetched thing about a Republican judge that you could convince me of today. Still, while it conjures a bizarre image and makes one wonder what they talked about, these few vague stories seem to be all that is out there about the Jersey Devil. Until 1909. Most of the Jersey Devil sightings reported seem to be wild claims lacking any detail or corroboration by other sources. But then, in 1909, all of that changed when there were 30 reports in the paper in the first week of January alone. These reports followed a sighting reported by Trenton Councilman E.P. Whedon. Whedon woke to the sound of flapping wings outside his window, and upon investigation said he found cloven hoof prints in the snow. Once this sighting was published, hundreds of other people reported seeing the Jersey Devil too. People reported seeing, hearing, or finding evidence of the creature in Pennsylvania and Delaware, as well as near Trenton, New Jersey. Was the Jersey Devil traveling along the Delaware River to Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Delaware? According to AtlanticCountyNewJersey.gov's page about the Jersey Devil, quote, "After the 1909 appearances, the scientific community was asked for possible explanations. Reportedly, science professors from Philadelphia and experts from the Smithsonian Institution thought the devil to be a prehistoric creature from the Jurassic period. Had the creature survived in nearby limestone caves? Was it a pterodactyl or plesiosaurus? New York scientists thought it to be a marsupial carnivore. Was it an extinct fissiped? However, the Academy of Natural Sciences in Philadelphia could not locate any record of a living or dead species resembling the Jersey Devil," end quote. A marsupial carnivore? A fissiped? What even is a fissiped? Now I have new nightmare fuel. I have seen those videos of terrifying kangaroos that look like lobotomized gym bros trying to drown dogs. Now I can add to the image some long, sharp canine teeth tearing flesh from bone. I don't know about you, stranger, but the Jersey Devil is starting to sound scarier by the minute. In October of 1909, the Philadelphia Public Ledger published an article about bizarre remains found in Burlington County, New Jersey. Quote, "Apparently, the animal had been dead several months. Its frame is well preserved, and the dried flesh and remnants of long hair stretch over the rack. Its appearance, the head and hindquarters, resemble a cat, but there the resemblance ceases. The front legs consist of four distinctly jointed sections, and instead of feet, there are flat bones, 3 inches long and half as broad, with a half-inch keel on the bottom. The front legs are about 14 inches long, while the entire animal is about a foot and a half in length, with a kangaroo-like tail and what appears to be the framework of wings," end quote. The men who'd allegedly found this skeleton said they would be turning it over to the Academy of Natural Sciences of Philadelphia. However, according to the blog Thunderbird Photo, there is no record of the Academy of Natural Sciences of Philadelphia receiving a specimen matching that description. Once these theories about the biology of the Jersey Devil were out there, it became obvious to the scientific community that the thing to do would be to capture the creature. Given the attitudes, research, and zoological trends of the time, I assume the plan would be to keep the thing in the teeniest cage imaginable so passersby could pay gawking money, and then to eventually study it in the Philadelphia Zoo's recently established Penrose Research Laboratory, by which I mean they would dissect, vivisect, and otherwise sect it. To sweeten the deal and help the public feel involved, the Philadelphia Zoo's superintendent, Robert D. Carson, offered a $10,000 reward for the capture of the elusive creature. The reward remains uncollected. Hold on, gotta go book a train ticket to Jersey. The idea of the creature had by now so captured the imaginations of the people of the tri-state area that at the Arch Street Museum in Philadelphia, they created their own version of the Jersey Devil. Animal trainers painted an actual kangaroo with green stripes and gave it a set of false wings, which I swear is animal abuse and is nothing at all like the time I dressed my dog up as a bumblebee for a dog Halloween parade. But seriously, animals in the late Victorian era had it rough. Once they got involved, scientists continued to theorize beyond vicious marsupials. One such theory, which sounds kind of reasonable, was that the creature might have been a Sandy Hill crane. Apparently, Sandy Hill cranes stand 4 feet high and are about 15 pounds, with upwards of an 80-inch wingspan. The main thing that recommends the crane as a good stand-in for the Jersey Devil is its documented ferocity when cornered. Also, it gyrates when flying. I have no idea if the Jersey Devil was known at all for its gyrating. Are there any strip clubs in Jersey called Jersey Devils? If not, that is a missed opportunity. By the 1920s, the Jersey Devil had become a local legend, with reports ranging from mysterious animal sightings to strange occurrences, and at long last, the first photographic evidence was produced. In 1925, a farmer in Greenwich Township shot and killed a mysterious animal that had been preying on his chickens, but not before he snapped a photo. Over 100 people attempted to identify the creature from that photograph, but no one could conclusively say what it was. I'd like to imagine the conversations went something like this. "Say, Doris, did you get a gander at that photograph of the hoodle-doodle bird? What a pair of gams on that cockamamie pussycat. He's no looker, I'll tell you that. What do you think it is? Hiya, Ethel. I saw that woozle bug and nearly passed out. I had to have a gasper to steady my nerves. I don't have a clue, Ethel, old gal. Say, let's go cut a rug Friday night." And so on. The sightings of the Jersey Devil continued to roll in through the years, peppered with a few truly harrowing accounts. According to a piece on UrbanLegendsOnline.com, quote, "In 1927, a cab driver on his way to Salem got a flat tire. He stopped to fix the tire. As he was doing this, a creature that stood upright and was covered with hair landed on the roof of his cab. The creature shook his car violently. He fled the scene, leaving the tire and jack behind," end quote, likely shouting, "Not today, Bob," as he ran. Then there was this credible account, also found on UrbanLegendsOnline.com. Quote, "Philip Smith, who was known as a sober and honest man, saw the devil walking down the street in 1953, end quote. Just walking down the street, you know, like any cryptid would, probably window shopping. And there have been numerous other reports of the Jersey Devil over the years as well. There was the invasion of Gibbsboro in 1951, where people purportedly saw the devil over a two-day period. There was the farm in 1966, where 31 ducks, 3 geese, 4 cats, and 2 dogs were killed by the devil. There was a sighting in 1981 by a young couple who said they saw the devil at Atzian Lake in Atlantic County. But so many of the sightings of the Jersey Devil over the decades were more soundings or hearings. Are those words? You know what I mean. These encounters were nearly always more cases of "I heard a crashing in the woods" than actual sightings. According to JerseyHistory.org, people over the years often claimed to hear the creature, quote, "rampaging through woods or emitting blood-curdling cries," end quote. Now, I'm no survivalist woods person, but I think it is common knowledge that the woods are home to animals, like foxes and owls and other creatures that can and might make screaming noises that could sound very human. Doesn't it seem likely that many of these claims were just extra intense episodes of wildlife being wild? I recently went on a camping trip with my family, and at one point I sneezed so loud and with such ferocity, I followed it with, "And that's why people believe in Bigfoot." If only there was hard proof of the Jersey Devil's existence. Turns out there has been what some believe is hard proof. In the late 1950s, workers from the Department of Conservation found something strange in the pines. It was the burned remains of something. According to unexplainable.net, quote, "The creature was only a partial skeleton, but had massive hind legs, giant wings, and the remnants of what appeared to be burned feathers. Unable to identify the creature, it was temporarily labeled the final resting place of the Jersey Devil." End quote. Despite the determination that the men had found the Jersey Devil's final resting place, sightings of the Jersey Devil continued, which means one of a few things. A, the remains the men found in the pines did not belong to the Jersey Devil, in which case, what the hell was it? B, the Department of Conservation workers were pulling a prank. Or C, maybe that was just one of a family of Jersey Devils. Perhaps the later sightings were of the Jersey Devil's wife, Diane, or his son, Anthony. We don't know. After the incident with the unidentified remains in the pines, in 1960, a reward was offered to anyone who could produce the legend. Merchants in Camden offered a $10,000 reward. That's almost $108,000 in today money. The twist? The Jersey Devil was wanted alive. Sorry, New Jersey legend John Bon Jovi. Those who offered the reward promised to build a private zoo for the creature, presumably so folks could pay gawking money, and the merchants could make a mint. Some things never change. And if you, like me, are horrified at the thought of this wild abomination being caged, then you will be relieved to know that the reward remains unclaimed. The legend lived on, free and unincarcerated, into the 70s, when in 1978, two boys smelled rotting fish and claimed to see two red eyes staring at them from the woods. I think maybe they were hanging around in the swamp and smoking jazz cigarettes and saw each other's red eyes staring at them. It was the 70s, after all. Sightings and encounters with the Jersey Devil have persisted. As recently as 2015, claims that the Jersey Devil appeared along Route 9 in Egg Harbor Township swirled. According to HistoryCollection.com, witness David Black, quote, "thought that there was a llama standing inside of its fence along the roadway until it suddenly whipped out gigantic wings and started flying away." David Black grabbed his cell phone and tried to capture a video of this creature. The video clip is very short and shows what appears to be the Jersey Devil flying across the screen, a black silhouette against a colorful sunset, end quote. The clip was released online very close to Halloween, and most people think it is a simple prank. Even though Black told NewJersey.com, quote, "I swear it's not Photoshopped or a staged thing. People have said it's fake, but it's not. I'm honestly just looking for an explanation for what I saw," end quote. Unfortunately, no one else could back up Black's story, so the sighting is just one more in the long list of vague and general experiences that make up the legacy of the Jersey Devil. The lack of specificity or complete absence of facts around the legend do not seem to deter people from believing in the Jersey Devil, though. After all, back in the late 1930s, the state legislature even declared the Jersey Devil to be the official state demon. I didn't even know that was a thing. What is the official state demon of Rhode Island, I wonder? The Gabagool? Thank you. I'll be here all week. Once a legend like the Jersey Devil has been around long enough, it is impossible to separate it from the fabric of the culture. The Jersey Devil is as much a part of New Jersey's cultural tapestry as it is a part of its mythology. There was even an X-Files episode in 1993 about a whole family of Jersey Devils. I would be remiss if I didn't point out the similarities between the Jersey Devil and the Mothman. The descriptions sound remarkably alike, and not for nothing, but West Virginia and New Jersey are only about 250 miles apart. A quick jaunt, I'd say, for a winged creature. Whether you believe in its existence or not, the legend continues to fascinate and inspire. It should come as no surprise, then, that in 2022, the Pinelands Preservation Alliance started offering cryptid hikes. For a small fee, enthusiasts can search for the Jersey Devil, as well as Bigfoot and other mythic phenomena. At this point, the Jersey Devil is more like a mascot than a demon, and the locals and local governments simply lean into the stories rather than trying to dispel them, as they may once have done, when the Pine Barrens were unfavorably associated with crime and outcasts. In the end, skeptics can point to rational explanations for the noises and the weird sightings all day, but the legend of the Jersey Devil is made of hearty stuff. The tale of a monster born from curses and folklore, living in the shadowy corners of the Pine Barrens, won't be brought down by a little thing like facts or evidence. Maybe no one has been able to prove its existence, but no one has been able to prove it doesn't exist either. And it is in that murky gray where the Jersey Devil perches, waiting to swoop out when we least expect it. Next time on Strange and Unexplained, the story of the disappearance of Brian Vladek Hassel, a story I can almost guarantee you've never heard. Strange and Unexplained is a production of Three Goose Entertainment with help from Grab Bag Collab. This episode was written by Eve Kerrigan and me, Daisy Egan, with research by the Strange Research Squad. Sound engineering and mixing by Henry Lavoie. If you have an idea for an episode, head to our website, strangeandunexplainedpod.com, and fill out the contact form. I will write back. For more amazing content, join us at patreon.com/grabbagcollab, where for just $5 a month, you get all the Grab Bag exclusive shows, and for $8, you get those, plus Amber Hunt's Crimes of the Centuries and Strange and Unexplained early and ad-free. Grab Bag is an all-female and non-binary-owned profit-share network where our contributors get to keep ownership of their shows. We strive to give a platform to those who might not be able to land themselves on bigger networks. Who knows, maybe you have a podcast idea you'd like to pitch to Grab Bag. We've got live recordings, watch parties, book clubs, and more. Why there's so much going on over at Grab Bag, you'd wondered if we missed the memo on how capitalism works. Join me on Instagram at SNUPod, Daisy Egan, and GrabBagCollab, or head to the Facebook page to join in the conversation. If you like the show, please visit a sponsor with our unique code, give us a quick review and 5 stars, subscribe and download, and tell a friend. If you don't like the show, the name of the podcast is The Prosecutors. Stay strange.